How's it going? This is Scott Fish. I co-host a podcast called the Commission Impossible Podcast with Ryan McDowell. We don't exactly go over player values or dynasty trades or potential or rankings or mock drafts, and we usually don't even have guests. We just like to talk about commissioner stuff, so that's what you get. You can learn about lots of different scoring systems, interesting rules, settings, how to set up your playoffs, how to determine draft order, how to determine rookie auction values, things like that, stuff that commissioners might be interested in, like rivalries or rolling bankrolls or salary caps. We also answer commissioner questions. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, check us out. It's a pretty good listen.
Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got em. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win if I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winnings will turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict, Russ and Brian are the names. Trade Addicts Pod, let's go.
I am Dynasty Outhouse, and I have a trading problem.
I am Adam Wilde, and I also have a trading problem.
I'm Chris Allen. I think I have a trading problem. I think the problem is more so that I don't see them when people send them to me.
I think your problem is Adam doesn't actually send them, but that's a discussion for later.
No.
But as I usually say, hey, everybody, welcome to session 116 of the Trade Addicts podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts, and also a member of the Dynasty Addicts podcast network, the DAP network, if you will. And I will. I am here today with two of my favorite gentlemen, and I have to be honest, I don't even care if this is an hour and a half of silence. I'm just glad to see these beautiful mugs that... I feel like it's just been far too long. If you don't know, I'm going to, you know, usually I let them tell them, their, you know, everyone else what they do. But man, the Dynasty Owner's Manual, which they just, look, we get it. Adam got a kid. He had a new house and all of this stuff. Yeah, life happens. But I need my good podcasts back. And you two need to get off your asses. So
I knew that was coming. I didn't know it was coming so fast.
Oh, right. No, right out the gate.
Ouch.
I keep it real. I keep it 100, as the kids
that
say.
That hurts, man.
Also, to be fair, later we're doing, to be fair. Do you guys watch Letterkenny, by the way?
Yes, I do.
I've watched like a half an episode.
It is fantastic. It is hilarious. And I've never realized how often I say to be fair. And now I have to sing it every single time I do say it.
All right.
It's both hilarious and the worst because I just feel like an ass because I keep saying it over and over again. And I keep making fun of myself for saying it over and over
again.
What
streaming service is it on? And I'll bookmark Hulu. It's Hulu. On Hulu. Okay. All right.
Yeah, it's on Hulu. My favorite's Good and You.
Pitter patter. Let's get at her.
Let's get at her.
One of the listener question was, when are we getting a new Dynasty Owner's Manual from Rocky? So it's not just me.
Soon.
Hashtag just saying, as the kids say these days. Actually, they don't say that anymore. Okay, well, let's bring it back. Let's bring it
back.
Okay. I have Chris Allen, Adam? Well, Aaron? I forgot what we called you. I think we called you Aaron last time when it was just me and Chris the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
Aaron.
Yeah, maybe.
But these are two of my favorite gentlemen. I got to meet them at the Midwest Expo last year, which I am so sad is not happening this year.
I know. That is, wear your masks.
Yep. Yes, please. Seriously, wear masks so I can hug these gentlemen again next year.
No, right. It's the best hugs. You and J. Mike.
Sometimes I just look. Do you guys know that Wolverine picture, the meme? And you can put any picture you want, and he's just caressing it. I would like you to know that's what I do with the picture of you kissing my head when we first met.
I do love that picture. That's like one of my like scroll through whenever I need to smile.
I do too. Oh, look how cute we are.
I didn't know you were so tall. That was the thing. Like, I can never gauge like people's heights. Yeah, like Sam. Holy shit. Like, that dude is.
Oh, that dude's huge. A giant.
Yeah. Oh, Sam Fogg, man.
Yeah. That's Sam's impressive. Huge. Yeah. But I didn't know you were that tall. That was the thing that, like, yeah, that scared the crap out of me.
The first thing I ever said to Brian Haar when I met him in person was, I am glad you're not, like, surprisingly short.
Because this is going to look awkward.
Because I've seen his face a few times. Because back then, we were, like, using Skype. We didn't even see each other's faces all that, like, maybe 2 or 3 weeks before we met the first time. And then it was just, like, face-to-face. And then, like, I never stopped to ask, like you're a good, like, 6 feet-ish, right? Like yeah. I'm not gonna be able to like rest my elbow. Not like there's anything wrong with being short, but it's just if you don't like you build a picture of people in your head, and for some reason I can't understand why in my head everyone's taller than I am, even though I'm 6 feet. I'm by no means short, so it does actually throw me off a little bit when someone's shorter than I am, just because I can't explain it why, but everyone in my head is taller than me. It's probably just a self-esteem thing, and I'm probably going to cry a little bit.
That is a self-esteem thing. We can talk about that later.
Sounds like
Oh, my God. So football, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I guess.
Oh, my God. Chris, just tell everybody like the 18 websites you write for so I can just center myself a little bit.
And then tell them that's why we don't have any new shows.
Well, that could be it. So 4for4 primarily. Then there's Number Fire, and then there's Dynasty League Football, and then there's Football Guys, and I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's not that.
Are there any other sites out there?
No. Yeah,
They've asked them to come work for them. Yeah, there's sites out there.
I've talked to a couple of people. I've had some wonderful conversations with some folks. I'm not going to not putting my business out or their business out, but I'm just saying I've had conversations with people.
Yeah.
I'm committed for the 2020 season. Now 2021, we might be making some changes.
Called after individual. It's hard to get on his calendar.
I'm going to have to start up a website for 2021 just so you could write for me so we could hang out more.
Hey, I'm down with that. I mean, what you paying? Like, we can have that conversation.
Damn, right to what am I paying?
I'll take it.
How you doing, Adam?
I'm just living the dream. I went through great lengths to sit at the bar that I made in my basement, and I've got a very nice setup upstairs that I could have just sat at. Now I kind of wish I was at said setup, but you know what? I worked hard on this thing, and now I'm sitting at it.
So jealous. He posted a picture. I tweeted out asking what we should talk about. And he quote tweeted it, throwing a picture of his bar and his little setup. And of course, he shows it. There's like 3 seats sitting there. And I'm just like, in a perfect world, we would be sitting at that bar.
Yeah, got room. Let's go.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
One day. But let's actually talk a little bit of football. A little bit of football.
Let's do it.
The only thing that it's nice that we're getting a little bit of news. So we can talk about Derrick Henry actually getting paid. Where my first question to both of you is, did you actually see this coming?
No.
No. No.
At least not this year. I'm like, my guess was that at the very latest, it's immediately following the end of the 2020 season, assuming that looks like we're having one. Or at some point like midway through the season, like he might get, like they might work something out midway, and
you can't
he's on the tag. The 15th.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he can't do that. So it had to been like immediately afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought they were being smart. Chris and I just last week's show was pretty much actually everything he said before you hit record about how it sounds way better in prep than it does during the show. I feel like we crushed it on every single thing Derrick Henry, and then I think we hit maybe 33% of the points when we actually were trying. Yep. But the big thing is I hate that I've had to hate Derrick Henry for his whole career, because in real football, I love him. I would have loved to block for him as an offensive lineman. He's awesome player, awesome to watch, but he wasn't efficient back, and he's the type of player that had that cult following that you had to argue with all the time. That just made no sense, like Damian Williams. But
Why do you do that?
Because of you.
There's no need for that.
Well, it actually worked out for you. So, but anyways, I think that I thought that they were being smart. They didn't give him as much money as they could have to be really stupid. Honestly, I think that both sides in that aspect were pretty smart. They both agreed on a pretty reasonable number, in my opinion. But what Chris and I were discussing is every single dynasty owner right now that doesn't have Derrick Henry has to make a stand, because we were looking at how close his numbers are, especially in standard. I know most people don't play it anymore, but he's going to be the RB2 in standard as long as he's healthy. And he's going to be probably top five in PPR as long as he's healthy. You're banking 300 touches. Sure, he'll give you 16 receptions, something like that. But you need to take your stance right now and say, do we like rookie running backs because they're going to be on four-year deals, sometimes five-year deals, or mm-hmm. do we like them because they're young? If you like them because they're young, well, Derrick Henry's not for you because he's going to be 29, almost 30 by the time his contract's up. But if you like them because they're on a four-year deal, which I'm starting to lean more towards that. I mean, age has to be a factor, right? Especially at running back, especially when, you know, they're getting pounded all the time. So you have to factor that, I'm sure, but I'm not in any way certified to factor in longevity. So I think I lean more towards, I just love rookie running backs because they're the cheapest productivity you can find at the running back position, and you get them locked up for 4 years. Because my biggest problem with running backs is I don't want them changing teams. Whatever situation they had, I want them to stay. Not very often does a running back change teams and end up just being an absolute stud. Mm-hmm. So if you start leaning towards how I'm kind of leaning, it's like, yeah, you can buy him right now, and he's going to be a little bit more expensive because he just got a four-year contract. Sure. You can even wait for that to settle down a little bit. But you need to buy him knowing that his price will never, ever, ever, ever go up. Ever. Mm-hmm. Every single day it's going to go up that little bit of value, or go down that little bit of value. Mm-hmm. And Ray Garvin, we talked about him before the show, but he had a good tweet the other day. CMC and Derrick Henry are, he said, his two running backs that he's just going to ride them out, and he won't ever trade them. And that's fine. If you're winning championships on their backs, that's the deal. And what you do is you just draft, you know, running backs to fill in for them. You have essentially 4 years to figure out your running back position behind Derrick Henry, knowing that you're never going to trade him for any value. So if that's what you want to do, honestly, I just think every single responsible owner needs to look themselves in the mirror and have that conversation about Derrick Henry right now. Because you can acquire a top five running back potentially for 4 years for a very modest price of like RB14 right now.
Right. And it's funny because, like, Ever since last season, like ever since we knew he was coming on his contract year, and especially once Tannehill started doing really well, I hate saying everyone, but I just did it anyway. It seemed like the popular opinion, which mine was too, they were going to sign Tannehill, tag Henry, hope they win the Super Bowl, and then let him go. And then I assumed the Jaguars would just pay him crazy money because it's the Jaguars.
Right.
And the thing is, his dynasty trade value absolutely reflected that. It absolutely reflected the fact that people just thought he was going to be a mercenary at this point. You know, 1-2 year deals in different places. Well, he'll be a battering ram and get run into the ground because 1-2 year deals, why try to take care of a guy? And just like all up in our faces. Gladly, I bought more than I sold this non-point scoring. I only sold one.
I couldn't do it.
The trade was Derrick Henry and Jarvis Landry for DeAndre Hopkins.
I would want Hopkins.
No. I got Hopkins for that. Like, that's the only share I sold.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. I like that.
In another deal, I think I traded DeAndre Hopkins. At least I think it was Hopkins for, no, that sounds too wrong. No, it was Kenny Golladay. For Devontae Parker and Derrick Henry.
Okay, I think I might do that, I guess.
I think I'd do that.
Parker in the bucket of ascending young wide receiver. Like, for example, in a league, I understand nobody wants to trade Julio, I get it. But in a league where Julio was expendable to me, 2 years in a row, I've won the championship. And on the team, I've got Dalvin Cook, CMC, and Lamar Jackson. So, and then I had DJ Chark step up big, and then AJ Green's going to come back from injury. So those two players I didn't account for doing anything, I can account for this year. So Julio's just sitting there, and yes, I would love to have his points, but I felt like I could get it done without him. So I sent a trade to every single team for their 2021 first and an ascending wide receiver. Now, I asked for way better wide receivers than Devontae Parker, but he was like bottom of the barrel on who I would consider young and ascending. And I that one got accepted. There was plenty more I wish got accepted, but let's just hope that last year is indicative of a change and he's not going to go back to doing nothing.
Yeah, let's completely move this conversation away from Derrick Henry at this point, because now I want to talk about Devontae Parker and his value, because I got to be honest, I remember I was a big fan of him coming out when he was a rookie. I made all the excuses, young wide receiver, take some time and all of that stuff. And I have a few shares now that I really hope to flip eventually. But what happens if Devontae Parker, especially at the beginning of this season, he'll most likely still have Fitzmagic, who's a YOLO quarterback, is great for everyone. And Preston Williams, if he does play, won't be fully healthy, most likely. So if we're halfway through the season and Devontae Parker is top 20 wide receiver, like his value could possibly go up, right? Like it's like it's really tough, because I know you're always going to have, especially with the road he's taken, let's just say, you know, the magical fifth year breakout, there's going to be a section of the community that will want nothing to do with him. But I still think there's, I mean, let's just call it ADP wise, where I think he can technically go up, which I'm talking this through in my head because I've never really considered this before.
Well, yeah, there's still room for him to improve, I guess, at least from a value standpoint. And if he continues along the same trajectory as he did last season, I mean, why not? It's just like you were just saying, there have been, we've literally been through this like 3 years in a row before we finally hit pay dirt. And so, and even then, I mean, it has a like a massive asterisk next to it, because Preston Williams was, I mean, he was competing with him for targets or for significant target share. So if Devontae Parker needed, what, Preston Williams, he was undrafted, right? Or was he?
I think seventh or undrafted. I can't remember how far. Undrafted
because of.
That's right.
Off the field issues.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I mean, we're looking at a guy in his fourth year that we were hoping to finally hit, but now the only way that he hit was after he's like loses basically, he ends this competition with an undrafted free agent in or undrafted like wide receiver in Preston Williams. And then after that he balls. So it's like, even then it's like, has like something of an asterisk, like alongside his 2019 season. So it's just, I don't know. I want to believe like the same way that I'm holding out hope for Corey Davis.
Oh yes. There'll always be a little place in here for Corey Davis.
Always. I have to believe.
You could put the asterisks next to Preston Williams' draft grade as well. I mean, he was supposed to be a very highly touted wide receiver if he weren't in trouble. And I wish I don't remember what he even got in trouble for.
I thought it was something with dogs. I think that was him.
Well, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember his college coach, Preston Williams wasn't invited to the con, and his college coach wrote a letter to whoever does the invites and stuff like that. Like, look, I understand why you didn't do this, but I need you to know about Preston Williams and the man he's becoming and the man he has been and grown into. And I read that letter and I'm like, okay, now I'm rooting for this guy, because look, I've screwed up in life, never apparently to the point that he did, which I don't remember what it is in any way, shape or form. But I mean, our society is rooted in the idea that we can better ourselves. So, I mean, shouldn't we root for that? Shouldn't we want that to happen? And it seemed like this man was on his way to doing that and was working at that. So I was a fan of him after reading that letter. And then seeing him ball out was wonderful, and seeing him tear his ACL was freaking awful. But
yeah.
Matt Waldman loved him too, and so I drafted him every chance I got, especially since you could acquire him in the fourth. And then same reason I acquired a ton of Miles Boykin, because Matt Waldman loved him. And it wouldn't be us if we didn't talk any philosophy. I mean, the whole show is predicated on kind of taking information from smart people. It just you just have to pick the correct information to follow. And I love the work that Waldman does. So every year or so, I take those guys who he had graded highly the whole time, and then they don't get drafted as high for whatever reason. I'd love to just take those guys and take chances on them. I wish I could tell everyone to go buy Preston Williams right now. He's not really cheap to buy. He's cheap to draft, I've noticed. Every startup I've done, I've been able to get Preston Williams super cheap. And then Scott Fishbowl, I got him super cheap too, and I think he could provide some usefulness this year, I guess I could say. He's a name that people get excited about. They saw what he did last year to start the first eight games, so nobody wants to sell him. But you can draft him really cheap, and that's another conversation there, the difference between ADP and draft value. There's players that have shiny names on them that people – they can paint themselves pictures, which is my segue into the question was ascending, right? And I have transitioned from somebody who will take – all your old players, just give them to me. Let me go win the championship. I'll figure it out later. And I've transitioned to somebody who I really won't buy any asset that I can't paint a picture that they're going to ascend. I think Devontae Parker will ascend. Yeah, I think Preston Williams can ascend too. I will not be as cliche to say that Miami offense is going to be an offense, say like the Chiefs, where you just want to get a piece. But there are other offenses in the league where you just want the cheapest piece on it. I mean, I want cheaper pieces on the Cardinals. You can take chances on Hakeem Butler and Andy Isabella for almost nothing right now if you want to, knowing they're going to run four wide. I want pieces of the Saints offense. I mean, Tre'Quan Smith is free and Emmanuel Sanders is 32, 34 actually. So there's those offenses where you just want the cheap assets on. I feel like the Dolphins, not this year but next year, are going to be one of those offenses where you can't afford Mike Gesicki. You're struggling to afford Devontae Parker because, like you said, he will probably ascend. And you painted a perfect picture as to how if Preston Williams doesn't come back healthy or misses time, then it's just the Devontae Parker show, which is how we got here in the first place. And the only reason Gesicki sucked his first year is because Adam Gase's egregious use of 12 with a tight end that plays wide receiver. You know what? Why was his hand in the dirt ever? He should have been used as Evan Engram. But it's an offense that we should be excited about going forward. And if we want to excel in Dynasty, we need to find those offenses a year or two early, not a year or two late, because it's never going to work. If you listen to Sigmund Bloom every single year when it comes time to draft your redraft teams, he says you could pick five teams and just draft from those five teams and you could have a successful redraft roster. It's really the same thing in Dynasty. If you can pick a team that's going to be good the next 3, 4, 5 years, if you start taking cheap pieces on that, if you start taking your Mecole, now it's too late on him. But if you start taking your Tre'Quan Smiths, some other names will come to me. But get in on those offenses now. The Bengals offense, get in on that offense now. T. Higgins is super cheap. Get in on those now, and that's how you can build a roster, a monster roster, because – you can't go grab DeMarcus Robinson for the Chiefs if you want to, but like, what is that going to do for you? You know what I mean? That's too cheap. I think Miami is going to be a team that we wish that we bought pieces on now instead of then.
Shout out to Stompy and all the Albert Wilson shares, right?
Hell yeah. That's the one. That's the receiver that you want right there.
I mean, that's what Chris keeps telling me, I guess.
I mean, I want slot receivers. I mean, on an offense with a poor offensive line, and they're switching to at some point they're going to be switching to Tua. I mean, I want a slot receiver. I'm just saying.
I guess you could. I mean, you can even paint the picture that the running backs won't be super involved. Matt Breda's fine at catching. I love Matt Breda. Even though he never misses games, he's always hurt. And Jordan Howard's not catching. So I see you could paint the picture, but Albert Wilson has just never done anything for me.
I know. I always liked the idea of Albert Wilson just because he was one of those metrics guys that you were always able to say, once he left the Chiefs, he keeps, you know, there's,
he could do it.
You could, and then, I mean, technically he, whenever he has been alive and on the field, he hasn't been bad. It's just the second he left the Chiefs, he left his health in Kansas City, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that he's ever been a bad football player. He's always been useful for the teams he's played for. He's just never been a quality fantasy asset.
Oh yeah, absolutely has not. But he's been a good prospect, I guess that's the word to say. Like, he always had the ability to seem good, at least. And to bring back to your point before, getting pieces of offenses you think will be good in a year or two. I have been scooping, you know, to go with my brand of hashtag team, Big Clemson wide receiver. I have now actually been grabbing all of the Mike Williams I can.
I thought you were going to say Hunter Renfrow as a joke, big.
No, that's why I throw the big in there, because like Hunter Renfrow, like I feel bad for leaving him out, but it's just like, sorry, man. you don't really fit.
Yeah.
So like I've always liked Mike Williams, the player. I hated from the second the Chargers drafted him for some god unknown reason.
Yeah.
I've never liked the fit, but now that old man Rivers is gone, I love it with him. And I mean, even if it is Tyrod is a beautiful deep ball, and for Williams to be that large, that fast, and no less with Herbert, who, I mean, he's a good arm. That's what he is. So like right now, people are still down on Mike Williams, you know. He's a little slow to develop because he, like, man, that first year was pretty much a red shirt with the amount of time he missed with the neck injury and the hamstring in the preseason that held him off. So, like, technically, like, in my mind, we're going into, like, year three-ish. So I'm ready for it. I'm ready for him to get a quarterback that fits his skill. And he, I hope, goes nuts, A, for my brand, and B, because I've bought, like, three shares so far in the past few months.
Well, I love that you mentioned the Chargers because I've been waiting for an opportunity to talk about them. People don't realize that just because Justin Herbert doesn't look anything like Tyrod Taylor, that there's really not that big of a transition between the two quarterbacks. No. So Keenan Allen's a huge discount right now. Mike Williams is a huge discount. Hunter Henry on a franchise tag, probably don't want to pay for that sparkling name that I mentioned, like I mentioned earlier. You probably don't want to try to acquire him because he's still always been a dynasty darling. But there's players on that roster that you can acquire for cheap. And I mean, maybe still Justin Jackson, but definitely Kelly you can acquire for super cheap.
I have a lot of both those guys, just in case.
And the reason that they're super cheap is because people are saying the quarterback position is murky. And yes, in many cases, like going from Fitz to Tua, no idea. I don't know if I see Tua next. I don't know if I see him at all this year. I don't know, but it's going to be totally different when you do.
Yeah.
But I don't know that the offense has to change. Herbert excels on the bootleg.
Yep.
That's all Tyrod Taylor does. Both of them have range. They can both chuck it. Both of them aren't the most accurate. So it's not, I'm not saying that they're perfect quarterbacks for these players, but the discount is coming because people are afraid of the unknown and the transition from Tyrod to Justin Herbert. But if you look into it a little bit more, it's not that big of a transition. I don't know that the offense has to change at all. The players are fairly similar. Justin Herbert can move. So if you like those guys, I love Keenan Allen. I've got him in both of those DLF safe leagues that they've been doing. Both of those, I'm pretty sure I got Keenan Allen in just because you're getting him in like the fifth or something like that. And he's scoring right up there with the other 28-year-old wide receivers that we're drafting highly. Yep. So, I mean, that's another way to establish dominance in a dynasty league is find the uncertainty and maybe you're taking a chance, but it's cheap. So if you can find the uncertain situations like that and you can get in on those players who, heck, I mean, Keenan Allen has been a producer every year and he's been cheap still because of his injury prone, which is ridiculous. What did he blow out, a spleen?
Spleen and a torn ACL are two very connected injuries. I've done
not really, not really interesting.
I'm an expert. So, So uncertainty is another way that you can exploit the market, quote unquote.
I think people just are generally down on the Chargers in general because they didn't have, well, one, I mean, yeah, Keenan Allen is, let's say, older. I mean, he's not old, but getting there. Mike Williams, again, for as much as we want to see like more of those highlight plays, I mean, with Phillip Rivers, they weren't going to happen anyway because he's already an older quarterback. But now, even with what we already acknowledged, that Tyrod Taylor and Herbert, like, they can both throw a fairly decent deep ball, so there should be some hope there. But I think it's just when it came to the quarterback position, the hope was that the Chargers would wind up with somebody like Tua, like one of those quarterbacks that were one of the quarterback prospects that were closer to the top versus Herbert. At best, I mean, he was looking like, I don't know, probably, I mean, there was a pretty significant teardrop between after Tua. I mean, it was just like there was going to be this like Tua, Burrow, and then it was basically everybody else. Yeah. And so just that negativity that adds to that bias. So in a sense, we're already kind of like double counting, because the Chargers, or like the fans of the Chargers, didn't get the quarterback that they want. So on top, and then they're already like knocking Herbert for something that there's like he literally had no control over. Right. So if that negativity is priced into like his value, which to me it looks like it is, I mean, that's something that you can leverage and wind up with. I mean, he might not be the best quarterback, but again, for fantasy purposes, could be useful.
He absolutely isn't the best quarterback, but you hit the nail on the head that I think he can definitely be conducive to fantasy points.
Yeah.
I don't even like want to talk. Can you guys just go for the next like 40-ish minutes and I could just sit and listen to you guys talk? Like, I don't like, I miss this. Like, I just like listening to you guys go like, okay, no, this
is one of our text messages to each other are basically us like arguing back and forth, like over players and just like figuring out, okay, well, I think this could happen. No, you're wrong. This is probably the way it's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's stupid. John Brown is going to wind up in the Hall of Fame.
And oh my goodness! So on and so forth. That's what we normally want to do. Chris makes me talk about, dude. Sometimes I just want to throw
players.
This is what Chris does. If I want a good player, Chris Chris does not want. He tells me every player on the roster that could potentially see touches from this player, and I'm like, Chris, why do I have to talk about Zay Jones right now? I don't know why. I don't know why we have to be talking about Fabian Moreau. I get it, like.
I mean, other these are legitimate arguments.
Look, I'm just saying, I still remember Zay Jones, like, reverse smooth criminaling.
Yeah.
Oh, that was still, that's just, like, so much, like, core muscle, like.
That upped his dynasty value, that one little move right there.
Yeah.
Well, I always remember, well, two things I remember about Zay Jones. One, when I was a personal trainer, the other personal trainer that I worked with went to school with Zay Jones, and he was a film student, so he did a cool film with Zay Jones in a baseball bat at a pitcher's mound, breaking records because he broke all the records at ECU. and then the second thing I remember is his terrible video. I felt so sorry for him. He was obviously – I shouldn't have said obviously. I don't know what the hell is going on. Mentally unstable or very drunk very high. But felt very bad for him. Yep. And then all I could think about is when – I wanted to draft him so bad, and my brother convinced me to draft John Ross, and then five picks later, I had another second-round pick, and I got Zay Jones, and it was like the best 207 that I've ever had in my life. I was so happy.
Yeah.
Just remember that moment, because it didn't really pan out too well.
No, it didn't, unfortunately. And now he's completely buried. I thought that he was at least still worth a roster spot when he went to the Raiders, but Not anymore. Nope.
Yeah, that team. Well, that roster in general went from like barren with like some, like, I guess with some upside, like depending on like if you wanted to invest in assets like Zay Jones or like Hunter Renfrow, and now it's just like pick one or just go buy Derek Carr and hope that he has a good season.
I got him in SFP.
Yeah, you're doing it. Like, the only reason that I didn't put the Raiders in with the Bengals and the Dolphins and offenses that you can buy into right now are going to be great is because I don't know what the hell they're going to do at quarterback.
Right.
I think they draft one next year. Carr, right, but you don't know who. And even with COVID, you don't know even who's going to be available. So it's so tough to recommend them, but they do have their wide receiver core of the future, in my opinion.
Yes, I mean, I agree.
Renfrow doesn't get enough credit for what he's done for the team in his first 2 years. Even if you don't like Ruggs, which honestly, I didn't really like him as a prospect. He's could not have picked a better wide receiver for that team, that West Coast offense. And then Bryan Edwards is just all around a stud wide receiver. And they got him in third because of his I believe, abdomen injury, which should heal fine. So yeah, they have basically they have the Rams offense.
Yeah.
But they're all young.
Okay, yeah. Wait, no. Since you brought up the Raiders, I want you guys to tell me tell me how to feel about Darren Waller. Now, let me first tell you how I feel about it, and I want you to just tell me if I'm right, I'm wrong, or somewhere in the middle.
Okay.
I was listening to Dynasty Trades HQ this morning, uh-huh, and at least I think it was that show. I can't even remember anymore, but they were talking about a trade, and it was, you know, three pieces on each side, and Waller was involved as well.
Uh-huh.
And in my head, I'm just like, that's a 3-for-2. Like, I completely just wrote Waller out of the equation completely. Like, uh-huh, to me, he was awesome. He was great. But then Hunter Renfrow got healthy, and Waller literally disappeared. And now we're bringing in Ruggs. We're bringing in Edwards. Foster Moreau's another year better into the NFL when he was catching touchdowns that completely took away from Waller as well. Like, to me, to call him like a dead asset is a little, that's a much, like, you know.
Yeah.
The way my brain went was, but like, I don't even really, like, if I started listing my top 10, 12 tight ends, I legitimately would not, and talking dynasty value, not even, maybe if I was, no, like, even if I'm talking reach, like, I can't put him in there. I don't see the upside of him anymore. Like, am I wrong? Am I, like, can you just please tell me how you feel?
Honest Q, do you feel the same way about Evan Engram?
Well, no, because we've seen him do it even with other players on the field.
But
his first year where he went nuts, yes, I absolutely never bought into his value, his price up there, because like, he was like tight end 3 or 4 for a while after that year. And that was 1000% circumstance. We always knew he was a great athlete. We always knew he was pretty much a wide receiver at the tight end position. Mm-hmm. But man, that dude got like a 90% target share just because there was no one else to throw the ball to. And now at this point, you know, if he's healthy, I think he's fine, because he is something that they don't have a large wide receiver. You know, they have Golden Tate, who's a little guy, and Sterling Shepard, who's a little in between, but they're still both possession guys. And then they have Slayton, who's the fast guy. Evan Engram's perfectly in the middle of that. He has the complete middle of the field, and he can still run the seam because he's fast and giant and he's big. So he still has his place.
Waller still has his place, though. Waller can do the same thing.
So I don't have any data on hand right now, of course, but did both of you watch Hard Knocks with the Raiders?
No.
Oh my God. Okay. So I was doing preseason DFS, which is pretty much just lighting your money on fire.
Yes.
Yeah. And except for 5 people. So those 5 people, don't get mad at me. Congratulations on your money. The rest of us are giving you our money. So doing preseason DFS, watching the Hard Knocks, and fourth quarter of the Raiders game, either game 3 or 4, but I almost want to say it was 4, where it really shouldn't have mattered. Darren Waller had been sitting for 2.5 quarters on the bench doing nothing because he was completely done his job for the night. The random third team Raiders got to like the 5-yard line. John Gruden lost his mind trying to get Waller back in the game. A random assistant coach comes over the radio and is like, coach, he's out. John Gruden calls a timeout, finds Darren Waller, prepares him to get back into the game to throw him a fade, which he catches. It was beautiful for a touchdown. This is before Darren Waller happened. Now, even before that, he was always supposed to be good. The Ravens talked highly of him in the offseason every year. He just battled drug addiction. So it's not like he came out of nowhere to be a productive dynasty asset. It's just that these are real people, and he had a real problem with drugs. And now he was able to function. What happens in dynasty, and we do it all the time, no one's perfect at all. I got terrible teams, but what we do is we find reasons why these players aren't going to do it again all the time. All we ever talk about is regression, but we never talk about players getting better or doing better.
Yeah.
A player that got that much volume should not have had 4 touchdown receptions, especially Foster Moreau. I called him Fabian Moreau earlier. That's a cornerback. Moreau should not have been catching touchdown passes. It's just, there's no, he's okay and they like him fine.
Yeah.
But Darren Waller was getting all the volume, and I believe he even did decent in the red zone. He just never caught the touchdowns. So We get the additions. We get the addition of Ruggs. We get the addition of Edwards. We get the addition of healthy Renfro. And I get it. And then Jalen Richard's still there. You get the addition of Lynn Bowden. Mm-hmm. I would be more concerned for literally every name that I just listed than I would be for Waller. However, because it's how we're programmed in the Dynasty community, we're looking for regression. We're looking for, like, there was no reason Waller should have been that good. So we want him to not be that good again.
And see, I'm kind of doing the opposite, where I'm convincing myself what I saw at the end of the season is real, as opposed to what I saw in the beginning / middle. Because again, once Renfro was healthy, he started absorbing all of those targets. Now, I'm far too lazy to actually pull up stats or anything to substantiate any of this, but I had Waller on my vampire team in the Superflex Super Show Vampires Listener League, and Waller helped me to one or two wins in the middle of the season, did not help me to any in the end, and also I grabbed Engram the week before he pretty much just missed the rest of the season also. So,
right.
Yeah.
But that's a story for another... Actually, no, it's not really a story. Nobody cares. but it's just, it was something that, because of that specific team and the specific format of that league, yeah, I noted so much how he was not producing. And it was the second that Renfro got back on the field. And that's really what worried me. It's kind of like noticing that Cup, where I'm stuck on Cooper Cup not doing that well if they're actually going to run more two tight end sets. Because I forgot where it was that Matt Harmon just pretty much said, put that dude in the slot and he's the best wide receiver in the league. Put him against presser man coverage and he has a 12% success rate.
But that's another narrative that we're painting, because Everett should have been a thing every year. So we're just saying,
well, no, they ran that set more at the end of the year. That's not painting a narrative because the players did well.
But that's because Higbee came on. That isn't because...
Well, Everett got hurt. There was only one usable tight end at the end, but they were still doing it because their offensive line was so bad. At least that's my assumption why they were doing it.
Who was the third guy? I remember him. Their third tight end.
Oh, I'm not going to remember.
No, I don't remember who their third one. But
it'll come to me.
But to your point about Darren Waller, so I did look it up. From weeks 13 to 17, Darren Waller had 39 targets. And for context, so that's about like 8 per game. So over the last five weeks, he had about like 8 targets per game. For context, that would have been 5th out of all tight ends. That was so he was 2 behind. He was 5 targets behind George Kittle, about 7 targets or no, 5 targets behind Kittle, 6 targets behind Kelsey. Actually, Higbee had the most because he was going on his like rampant spree over the back end. But over the guys that we really want, and like if you want to talk about market share, that's like 21-22% market share, and that's essentially wide receiver one numbers like during that time frame with Hunter Renfro back.
Okay, so what you're saying is what I should be telling myself is he was still actually getting, because I mean I don't watch Raiders games, so I don't necessarily know.
The only thing that wasn't there was the touchdowns. That's the only thing that wasn't there.
I think his catch rate went down too, but that's also finicky if you're going to look at a 5-game sample size.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. He had the yips for a couple of games. I mean, so
four cards actually, probably.
So he had 31 targets or 39 targets and then 31 receptions 31 receptions. It's actually not that.
That's really good.
That's actually pretty good. That's almost 75%. Off the top of my head.
Look at that off the top of his head, just doing that.
79.5%. So that ain't that bad.
I am wrong. So, okay. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Because we remember those games, though. And like in RotoViz and like any of those people that put out those splits apps, they show like his target share like dropping. And I understand that. But within the context of the entire tight end position, which is essentially a wasteland, after you get past like the big two or big three, if you want to include Andrews. But still, Darren Waller, for all of his faults, he still had like a hell of a season for a tight end, especially coming out of nowhere. And I get that they've added a whole bunch of people like to the offense, but you only have so many dudes on the field at the same time. I mean, and Josh Jacobs is going to be the primary running back out there on the field most of the time. So I don't care about Jalen Richard. I don't care about Lynn Bowden. It's going to be Josh Jacobs out there most of the time anyway. And then for the wide receivers, it's Tyrell Williams, it's Henry Ruggs. Then if you want to, and I forget what their rates are for doing 3 wide, but then it's going to be Hunter Renfro. So I don't care about Bryan Edwards. I don't care about, like, is Zay Jones still even on the team? I don't care about any of those guys, because when it comes to them being like 11 people on the field for the Raiders, Darren Waller is going to be one of the tight ends that's going to be on the field.
Right, and he'll still be in there. They'll use him to block. They'll use him for anything.
Yeah.
But the reason I asked if you had his target share before that is I believe that those splits looked so bad because I want to say that his market share was like disgustingly large before that. I want to say
it probably was
to like 28%, I think, which is just absolutely absurd for a tight end. So 21% is fantastic, but people were probably showing those splits, which painted those narratives because, yeah, that's a 7% dip when a player comes back. No player should be taking 7% from another player right off the bat like that.
26% through the first 6 weeks of the season. Yeah, right. 26% target share.
That's great.
And it dropped
to 22%. So he went from, I don't know, Odell Beckham to DJ Moore.
Right.
That's essentially what we're talking about. We're going
from... Wrong way trip down narrative street is what I did, and just got upset that I wasn't winning games in my vampire league.
Well, I know I sound like I'm the biggest Waller truther on the planet. I just am doing what you told me to. You told me to convince you. So, but I think the biggest point to be made about this conversation is that you are in the majority in your feeling towards him, which means that market can be exploited. And he can be acquired fairly cheap, in my opinion. Not cheap in reference to dart throws at tight end, of course. He's not going to be that cheap, but he's going to be cheaper than what he's going to give you. I can say that. And that's another asset that you can call ascending, because the thing about Narrative Street is as soon as Narrative Street changes, as soon as the narrative changes, people are ready to jump ship right away. They want to correct immediately. Mm-hmm. So as soon as we get two games of 26% again, it's like, oh my goodness, I made a mistake. And then that's when you could sell Waller for a quick flip just like that if you wanted to.
Right. And or especially keep
getting the numbers.
I mean, and especially if you want to tell yourself the story that, all right, well, because of COVID, I mean, so they draft Henry Ruggs, but how quickly is a first, you know, a rookie wide receiver going to come on in a shortened offseason?
Well, you've had that conversation with me probably 10 times now. I think that Ruggs is the best suited to play ball in that offense right now.
I think. It just depends on if Gruden's going to use him the right way, and that's the assumption of rational coaching, which we don't know. I want to say yes, but at the same time...
That's the offense they run. I mean...
They could just as easily like keep throwing Tyrell out there because they're paying him a bunch of money. They're paying him way more than they're paying Ruggs right now.
We did talk about that. They did make a huge mistake with Tyrell Williams, but they also didn't know he was going to get hurt.
Do not dare talk negatively of Tyrell the Gazelle on
no,
the show.
No Gazelle slander.
I don't think it's. I'm not. I liked him too. I mean, he's got one of the most impressive dynasty rises out of nowhere, and that's just because he was. Just talk about like. A perfect contract year. He was 100% necessary after being 100% unnecessary in his contract year. So
what he paid off what, like 1 week last year? Tyrell.
It was a great week. He was my most owned player there.
Wasn't it like week one where he went for like maybe like 90 and a touch or something?
Oh, you're right. I think he did have like 16 points in week one. And then he got
hurt. Then after that, it was just nothing. But I still think there's at least for all the narratives against Darren Waller, there's at least one narrative that says that he has a path to at least maintaining what he ended with, which is still 22% for a tight end. That's wide receiver one numbers. Take that back. That's like low end wide receiver one numbers, because like DJ Moore was at like 23%, right. I believe.
I still am saying like you're getting a wide receiver two, and he's probably tight end eight. Off the top of my head.
To me is fair. I mean, that's not... I don't think you're asking for too much there.
Do you think people are drafting Hooper over him?
If they are, I think that's bad.
Hooper's value has just died.
I think that's bad.
You feel?
I don't understand
even
that.
Worse, does anyone think that they're drafting Hurst over him?
Oh, gosh, I hope not.
You say that, but that's the feeling that I get.
It's probably pretty even.
I wouldn't be surprised, but at the same time, it's just that to me, that doesn't make any sense. Because Because why are you now going to buy the hype? I mean, you're essentially you're talking yourself into the fallacy of vacated targets, which
that's exactly what it is.
Which Peter Howard, like, his ears probably just like perked up at the notion of that. But
he's going to show up in the patron chat, even though he's not a patron.
Right. He's like, sup, like somebody called me.
That's probably the most emotional that I've ever got making a point on the DLF mailbag show, though, was that there is absolutely no reason to think that Hurst is going to be successful when Austin Hooper was like the poster child for what Peter is trying to nail into everyone's head, that targets are earned. He earned more and more and more targets like clockwork every year. That led to a fantastic season that led to getting paid to be the highest paid tight end in the history of the NFL, I believe. So if you want to talk about earned targets, which Peter does, he said vacated targets don't exist. Players earn their targets, and it's going to be different every single year, depending on who earns what. If you want to talk about earned targets, well, you can go to Pro Football Reference right now and look down the line and see progressive increase in targets for Austin Hooper
every year.
So why did he have to work so hard for 4 years for his targets to finally have an amazing season? And Hayden Hurst, who has done literally nothing, gets to, hey, what's up, Matty Ice? I'm here. How does that make any sense to anybody?
Matt Ryan, I'm here. 90 targets, please. Thank you.
Right. No, he's going to say, hey, well,
Atlanta defense is still terrible. And Calvin Ridley just ain't getting that respect. Julio might as well be playing with a walker. You're right. It's the vacated targets. I'm using heavy air quotes for the people that are not patrons and watching. You know, the Atlanta tight end, because it doesn't matter who it is, because again, talent doesn't matter. Atlanta tight end.
That's why we're drafting Levine Toilolo, like, for all of these years. If the Atlanta tight end doesn't matter.
He caught a couple of touchdowns. Don't you?
I know Tony Gonzalez. I know Tony Gonzalez was there.
What a great pull on that name, by the way.
I know Tony Gonzalez was there for a couple of years, and I get that. But I mean,
Tony Gonzalez, according to Matty Ice, is the second most athletic tight end that he's ever played with, behind Hayden Hurst. Just so you know,
he did say that.
Matty Ice did say that Hayden Hurst was the most athletic tight end he's ever played with, and he probably forgot that he played with the best tight end ever, because
it was obviously, feels like it was 20 years ago at this point.
Right. That was watching. When was Tony Gonzalez there? Like 2012?
No, later than that, because
I can't even remember anymore.
Oh, really? Man.
I'm gonna look it up.
Because they made it to the NFC Championship with Tony Gonzalez. And I remember rooting for them because I wanted Tony Gonzalez to get a Super Bowl.
That may have been 2012, because they beat the Seahawks in that playoffs. And it was because the Seahawks had the lead and they did what they always freaking do. And they go into their prevent defense, which lets teams just march right through them. And they lost in the last drive of the game. Thanks for bringing that up, Adam.
You're right, because I was thinking Super Bowl. So I'm like, when did they go to a Super Bowl last? But it was actually NFC Championship.
Yep, 2012 playoffs. Yep.
That was the Niners, Ravens year, I think, right?
That was what's-his-name's last game.
All right, so, but we're going to – okay, we're done talking about all these awful memories.
History lesson.
Brought up to me, because thanks. Okay, so we're going to move on a little bit, because, hey, remember that we started talking about Derrick Henry 45 minutes ago?
I forgot all about that.
Okay. Okay, well, since Adam will just refuse to trade me DK Metcalf, we only have one Trade Addicts trade to talk about, so we're going to talk about it now.
Okay.
And then we'll go into some listener questions, and then – I mean, let's face it, I'll talk to you until it's morning and I have to start getting the kids ready, kids up and get them breakfast, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But Trade Addicts Leagues, 12-team super flex, PPR, tight end premium, 1.75 points per reception for tight ends, which I don't even need to say because there's no tight ends in this trade, and 0.05 points for return yardage. This trade is from Trade Addicts 5, and I like this trade for the sole reason that I love – looking at trades where it's in a super flex league, clearly a quarterback on one side, but not actually getting a quarterback in return.
I love it.
Because it's kind of rare, because most of the times you send someone a trade like this and they're like, no, if I'm sending a quarterback, got to get one back.
I need one back. Yeah. I've been that way in the past. Like when I was first
trying more value by not.
Yeah.
So we talk about that after, but I have.
It depends on the league. If you have an active league, then go ahead and do it anyway. If you don't, then you kind of need to hoard them. But yeah, like you said, we'll get to that later. This trade was, well, since we're talking about quarterbacks, let's just say it's first. It was Kirk Cousins for Chase Edmonds, Brandon Ayuk, and a 21 first. You made the noise. So might as well talk.
Chris, I'll let you think about it for a second because I have an initial thought on that. The thing that you that I want people to start thinking about when they're sending players for 2021 first is think about how much better you're making the team by sending your player for their 2021 first. Because if you think about it, it was Edmonds, Ayuk, and the 2021 first. They were using none of their players, those players in their starting lineup.
Right.
So think about all the points that they just added from Kirk Cousins. So when you're thinking about where that 2021 first is going to land, just keep in mind you probably add a couple wins. If they need a quarterback and they send you Ayuk, Edmonds, and a 2021 first, they created an extra 300 and some points on the year, essentially.
Probably, so yeah.
Because you have to factor that into your trade, and I don't think a lot of people are. You're giving wins as well. So you're giving Kirk Cousins and wins. So you're getting back Edmonds, Ayuk, and a later first.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That my first question would have been, well, not question really, but more of a point. It depends on where that first is going to wind up at.
Man, for me to
that's where I would need to think on it a bit more, because if it's going to be a like 10 through 12, forget about it. If we're talking like 3, 4, 5, 6, okay, fine. I could probably get behind that. But yeah, I think to Adam's point, I think that's the easier way to look at it, in that those are players that, I mean, Chase Edmonds is an ancillary player. He probably needs an injury at best in order for him to actually see the light of day. And same thing with
Kenyon Drake, no contract. We just talked about that the other day. Right.
But like the same thing for Ayuk, I know that everybody's pushing him up right now because of the Debo injury, but I mean, he'll be back, I'm assuming, in like October, November. I mean, assuming that he gets like what he starts on the pup, so he winds up playing in October, November.
Estimate was that he could be back by the start of the season, and that's assuming they start the season on time.
That's what I'm saying.
If they push it back,
I'm saying worst case scenario, he's back in the middle of this season. So really, pushing him up is really just like that's nothing.
I know. Young receivers too. So yeah. What does that even matter?
But I think a lot of people will take a look at like his like Ayuk's like current cost,
right,
and try and factor that into the trade and say like, oh well, I mean, right, Ayuk, like where he's going in drafts right now, plus a 2021 first, like I'm coming out ahead. But that to me, that's not how I would look at it, because look at their situations. Ayuk, we have no idea what his target share is going to wind up looking at, even when he does get on the field. Like he's not going to be like taking away from Kittle. Debo is out there, like, and Debo's out there healthy, I don't think he's really going to be pulling away from Debo. So it's just like, what is he really adding into, like, what he's going to be adding to your roster? You got best, he's going to be what? Wide receiver, like low end wide receiver two, flex?
Oh, I don't think he gets even close.
That's what I'm saying. Like, best case scenario, that's what you're looking at, like, from picking up that asset. So at best, the only thing out of that is the first, and we know where that first is at. So I would probably rather stick with Kirk Cousins.
And Debo was essentially a non-factor. We need to remember that at the beginning of the year last year.
Yeah, he didn't shine until what?
Playoffs?
Honestly, like, playoffs. And
like, yeah, about like
I week, actually like, just week rewatched. 13. Right. I actually just rewatched the other day, and Kyle Shanahan was making a very valiant effort to use Debo Samuel all over the field, but that didn't start happening until the playoffs. He did start coming on at the end of the year, but not like that. Not like Kyle Shanahan predicated the offense around Debo, which is awesome, and which is why his value got so high, but which is why I have zero shares. Because if I know anything about being a former Redskins fan and Kyle Shanahan calling offenses,
Shanahanigans,
he can call whatever offense he needs to that week. And I don't know that he didn't go into the playoffs and say, Debo is going to be my Swiss Army knife, because that's how he was using him. Does that mean that he's going to be the Swiss Army knife every game going forward? Absolutely not. It's unfortunate that Ayuk has to be so expensive now, because I thought he was a fine target just because he was a first-round wide receiver and he was going in the second round of rookie drafts. Mm-hmm. But you can't touch him with a 10-foot pole right now, because – like, the reason I interrupted you is because it's so frustrating that Debo is such a young wide receiver with three more years on his contract. Mm-hmm. Ayuk's a young wide receiver. He's going to have a potentially 5 years on his contract. We're talking about two very young wide receivers with a lot of time left on their contract. Why has his value changed over an injury that, like Russ said, may not even go into the season? We're just so knee-jerk on that. And something like that is frustrating to me because I can't understand why anybody would have Ayuk on their team right now. You should have already sold him if at least one out of 12 people in your league is going to, or 11 besides you, is going to say, I value Ayuk more because Debo hurt his ankle, then you need to sell him to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's my question. Let's say Debo misses this season.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, for whatever reason, even if it is the foot, whatever, regardless, any reason whatsoever. And it's presumptuous to say he walks into what Debo was in the playoffs.
Sure.
A, mm-hmm. he's a rookie. B, Shanahan, you never really know. But right. Let's say he throws like a high end wide receiver 3 season out where he's solid. He's solid. He makes your, you know, we start 10 people in the trade addicts leagues, which means you need a wide receiver 3 in your lineup because, you know, you could start 6 wide receivers if you felt like it. So right. He absolutely has a place. Yeah, me too. He absolutely has a place in your lineup. Uh-huh. But then Debo comes back. What's mm-hmm. going to happen?
The same thing that we were talking about with Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow. Like that target share, whatever target share he had beforehand, goes away.
5%. 5% is fair to say.
So like what I'm trying to get at, which is what you sort of helped me with, is there I don't see a path where Ayuk can be great. or at least his value, because that's not fair to the player himself. Because I don't know. Maybe something happens and he's the next Odell Beckham. I have absolutely no idea. I doubt that happens. Mm-hmm. But value wise, he has to be like George Kittle has to stay healthy, but Brandon Ayuk needs to get like 30% target share and become a top 10 wide receiver, like end the year as a top 10 wide receiver. Like that to me, it's like the most outlandish thing I've ever said, but like that's to me what I think needs to happen for Ayuk's value to not take a hit because Debo's coming back.
Right. Which, especially in that offense, is not going to happen because, I mean, Kittle wound up with like the highest target share in that offense. And if they're really not looking to, I guess, invest in like the prototypical, like if they weren't going to invest in Jerry Judy, CD, Rager, I mean, like a not necessarily a prototypical.
Yeah, they had their shot at like T. Higgins or
prototypical X receiver. If that's not what they were going for, then there's no way that you can expect Ayuk to turn into that or get a market share that's high that he's going to wind up competing with those prototypical X receivers that we value so highly. It's just I don't see how that's in his range of outcomes.
You and I talked about that on draft night when we were doing the live show for DLF.
No.
Why did they just draft Debo Samuel when they drafted Brandon? I'm like, why did they do that? They already had that. And we think about the Raiders offenses where it's like, okay, I have my defined short slot guy in Hunter Renfrow. I've got my West Coast guy, and then I've got my outside guy. And you think that every team needs to do that, but you're kidding my – you're kidding yourself if you let yourself get fooled by the San Francisco offense, in my opinion. If you think that – so look at it on the surface. There's two players that are going to get the rock. It's going to be Debo and it's going to be Kittle. That's not the case. Kendrick Bourne's going to be involved. Jalen Hurd is back, and they love that guy. Oh, my goodness, they love Jalen Hurd, and he just didn't get to see the field. And then they also really love Trent Taylor, who everyone's forgotten about because he was hurt for an entire season.
Right.
So you get all those guys back, and – I just think that a lot of people that bought high on Ayuk are going to be really sad when the season comes around because, oh my goodness, was that Jalen Hurd? Was that Kendrick Bourne? You're going to see Richie James. You're going to see those guys just as much as you see Ayuk, and you're going to say, wait a minute, that's not fair. I paid so much for Ayuk.
I mean, is Brent Celek still on the team?
Probably. Yes, actually. No. Ross Dwelly.
Yeah, Ross Dwelly. Yeah, that's right. Kyle Juszczyk.
Kyle Juszczyk's still there. You'll probably see just as much Ross Dwelly as you see Brandon.
Yeah. I'm just kidding.
All right. So sorry for the dude that traded away Cousins for this, but 3-0 against you, bud.
Can't do it.
All right. So let's get into some listener questions, because that's how you say that phrase in English. Mm-hmm. Let's start with, Two Drink, because he always throws out the good stuff.
Yep.
Let's do it.
This isn't directed specifically towards Adam. If you do not know, actually, no, let's read it the way that Two Drink asked it. Mm-hmm. What are Cam's favorite songs? Wait, what are Adam's favorite songs to sing to Cam? Mm-hmm. And he does not mean Cam Newton.
Does not mean Cam Newton. He means my daughter, Cam. And we are now Patriots fans because of that. She's got her Cam jersey. And she is incredibly finicky. She will scream until I play either Moana, only specifically How Far I'll Go. No other Moana songs are acceptable. And Fleetwood Mac. That's it.
Does she have a specific Fleetwood Mac song?
No, she's just down with she's down with any Fleetwood Mac song.
It's, I don't remember where I told this story.
Make way.
All right, no, sorry. Not the wrong song, but just saying.
But no, that's my favorite song.
Right. I like it too, but I can't listen to it because she'll cry.
That's so sad.
The super awkwardness of my son being an infant and loving Boys to Men.
Hell yeah.
Except for his favorite song.
Water
imagine
try?
Singing I'll Make Love to You to a 3-month-old.
Come on, man.
Legitimately shut up the second you started singing that song.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. If you know How Far I'll Go, it comes in real slow and you start hearing the sound of the water. As soon as she hears that, even though
blinking,
it's
blinking, yeah.
Gone, yeah.
Yep. To see
it, I don't know about that. I don't know if I could do that.
I don't know if I could. I think he just gets to cry.
Yeah. Like, we're going to need you to suck it up, dude, because we're going to need to have a whole other conversation after I get done singing this song.
So wait, do you want to get in on it right now? I've been staring at the edge of the water
long as
I can remember. Come on, Chris.
Never
really knowing why. No.
Because that's not the good.
What songs do you got in your arsenal, Chris?
Well, that's mostly it. Well, now I've been stuck on Hamilton for like the past like 2 weeks since it came to Disney Plus.
I still haven't watched that for some reason.
Oh my God. Like, sit down and watch that. I mean, it's almost 3 hours.
But it's something I knew I was doing the second I found out it was coming. And
the thing is,
I live freaking 40 minutes from the city. I'm just not paying $300 for a ticket to it.
Yeah. I wanted to go see it live. I think it came to is either Dayton or Cincinnati, or maybe Columbus or Cincinnati. And, I wanted to go, but yeah, tickets were ridiculous. And I'm too much of a cheap ass
absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, I've been stuck on the Hamilton soundtrack for like the last couple of weeks. It's actually one of the easiest things. Like, I'll sit there and like I'll write articles to it and just listen. But yeah, I don't know. So that's been stuck in my head. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I won't ruin it for you. I mean, how can you ruin the story? But still, I won't ruin it for you. But yeah, check it out.
Absolutely will. It's a matter of when, not if.
Okay.
Let's go to Rocky's question, since I brought him up once already, at Dynasty FF Addict. We all know that certain people think Locke or Danny Dimes are this year's breakout quarterback. Who's this year's Baker that fails to live up to expectations? Now, weirdly enough, today I was listening to the FF Mercs pod, one of the many, many shows of Stompy and John Hogue together, and wow, my brain completely just went blank as to what the hell I was going to bring up when they were talking about this. John Hogue brought up Kyler Murray.
I saw that. He tweeted it too. I don't know that I think that.
I don't know about all that. I don't know. Like,
sounds like Drew Locke's going to be Baker Mayfield. If you're going to talk about not living up to expectations, the dude has risen so high that he's probably not going to finish nearly as high as he's being considered. I mean, I think pretty much everyone would handily want Drew Locke over Sam Darnold right now, and I think that is wrong.
Gase needs to get fired. I love Sam Darnold.
Yeah, me too.
I agree. Adam,
and to be fair, even with Gase, when he was healthy at the end of the year, he was doing really well. Like, everyone's only going to remember that I'm seeing ghosts. But after that, with him and Robbie Anderson healthy on the field together, they did really well.
Yeah,
I agree.
He was a part of, he was on my streaming column. I think he was like my top recommendation or like one of my recommendations. I want to say like four out of the like five, like fat, like the last few games of 2019.
And this is probably the best receiving weapons he's had. I mean, I get that, you know, Perriman's not great of a player on his own. Mims is a rookie, but the combination, like he has three prototypes at the position.
Yep.
Mims.
Well, Bell's got to be
Crowder as the possession guy and Perriman as the over the top guy. Like they have, and I mean, if Herndon becomes Herndon, but even still, I still have so many Ryan Griffin shares that people just have forgotten his existence. Like if Herndon just gets hurt or gets suspended again, I mean, Griffin's was doing really well at the end of the year. So I think that off, I mean, we completely just spun off the question. Sorry, Rocky, but.
Now, if there's a candidate that I would say, because I just actually had a breakouts piece published for 4 for 4, and Daniel Jones was on that piece. But for guys that could fall flat, I don't know if it's going to be like a Baker-esque fall flat, but I do know that like Matthew Stafford, he's being drafted like really high, like right now.
Is he?
Yeah, at least like from a like best ball like redraft perspective. I know this is more of like a more of a dynasty
because even still forward. this even season, still,
like, but like but Matthew Stafford, he's 32
right now.
Yeah, but still, I mean, so we still, I mean, he still has a number of years left that I mean, we have plenty of time to like keep him on our rosters. But like right now, he's being drafted as like the QB 10-ish. Like right now, QB 10, QB 11.
No, I didn't even think he'd be drafted that high because everyone talks about him being so cheap and being underrated because he was that QB 7 points per game before he got hurt. Like,
yeah, and that's the thing that like everybody's pushing up his ADP like because of that, like what he was doing before he got injured. Finally catching up. And Kenny Golladay, like everybody loves Kenny Golladay, Marvin Jones coming back, Hockenson, Swift. I mean, like all those things. But it's just like when we were talking about like Sam Darnold. At least he has those weapons like at all levels of the field. I mean, and he has because he's got the possession guy in Crowder. He's got Perriman like working on the outside. Herndon like up the seam. I mean, if we still think that like, Le'Veon Bell's going to do something, Le'Veon Bell on the backfield. I don't know if like Stafford has like similar like that same type of like weaponry to say that he's going to wind up like paying off that QB10 price. Like I've drafted him in a few spots, but like the more I think about it, if there was a guy that I would think would wind up, I guess, disappointing or not living up to like his draft cost right now, it probably would be him. And that's just based off of, I like Kenny Golladay. Don't get me wrong, but like a good season for Kenny Golladay is going to be what 1100, 1200 yards, like somewhere in there. But do we really see Marvin Jones also hitting 1,000 yards? What TJ Hockenson also getting it? How does Matt Stafford get to 4,000 yards because he's not all that much of a rusher? So how does he get to 4K plus yards?
He always does though.
To wind up with, you know, that QB 10 like finish.
I mean, like, their defense is not great, and Stafford, like, I am still just furious at Daryl Bevel.
Because
first of all, I was super down on the entire Detroit offense. But you knew
what Bevel was in Seattle.
Yeah, he was trash. Yeah. But then all of a sudden, Stafford's slinging the ball from the beginning. And I'm just like, what is this? Where was this? What's going on? We had Russell Wilson. But what's...
Why?
But Stafford gets yards. To me, that's what he always did. He always got yards, whether it was just every single one of those yards going to Calvin Johnson or if it was, you know, nowadays... Doesn't even matter who he's throwing the ball to. He always got yards.
Yeah.
We got to remember, he's one of the only quarterbacks in the league right now that has had two wide receiver ones in fantasy football in the same year. Marvin Jones and Golden Tate. Golden Tate was the wide receiver 11. Marvin Jones was the wide receiver 12. That's what he does.
Still counts.
Quite a bit. Still counts. I think that if I don't think that Drew Lock has gotten that high. I don't think that Matt Stafford's the QB10 in Dynasty, though, either. I think that he's probably being drafted later than that. But if I could take Drew Lock and turn him into Matt Stafford for very cheap, I would definitely be interested in that right now. I don't even think that Drew Lock is terrible. And I do get the sentiment that if everyone around you is good, you just have to be decent. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't always work. I mean, Sure, right, exactly.
Usable at times.
Yeah, he was usable at times.
But I don't think people are talking about Drew Lock as usable at times right now. And all of our buddy Bobby Koch wrote up a really good piece about he'd prefer as late as Gardner Minshew over Drew Lock. And
you like Gardner Minshew this season?
This season. That's my huge asterisk, my caveat.
Because if they tank for Trevor, it's a wrap.
That's exactly where my brain is. That team's going to be so bad.
You can't like Gardner Minshew for the season and not like him in Dynasty. If he does well this season, they can't. I talked about this a while ago. That's not the case, though, because Gardner Minshew is the captain of his own ship right now. Okay, I get that there's deeper prospects that Devy guys can yell at me for, but we're looking at Justin Fields. We're looking at Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Gardner Minshew has the power in his hands to make sure that his team is not in a position to draft one of those two quarterbacks. They're going in the top five. So if you like Gardner Minshew for this year, then that means they're going to probably win enough games to not have a top five pick, which means they're probably going to roll with Gardner Minshew going forward. That's just
there's no reason they can't be a four-win team, but him still throw for 35, 36 touchdowns.
Oh yeah, I guess. Well, now, all right. The more that I'm thinking about it, let me pull on this thread a little bit, because I do agree with Adam in that like the team could still suck, but they know this going into the season that they're pretty much putting Minshew in a no-win situation, and what he was seventh rounder?
Sixth rounder.
So his contract, at least as comparative to what they would have to bring on for Trevor Lawrence, is like peanuts in comparison.
Oh, for sure.
And that team is already strapped for cash, like as it is, after they had to jettison, how many players last season? And then Yannick Ngakoue, don't even know what's going to happen with him right now. So like they need to be able to rebuild at multiple points, like on their team. So if Minshew puts up even like a respectable season from a quarterback position, because like Blake Bortles was not good at quarterbacking.
True.
Minshew is at least, I mean, he shows the traits that he should be able to outkick what they paid for him. So even if the team sucks, the more that I'm thinking about it, it's possible that they could wind up just taking whatever high-end draft capital that they're going to wind up with in 21, because it's going to happen. And just investing where they need to, which would be either along the defensive front, corner safety. If they really want to make a splash, I mean, they could wind up looking at getting another wide receiver if they want somebody to go opposite DJ Chark, because that actually would be useful. They want to do offensive line, that's fine. They want to do running back. Okay. They want to do running back because they're getting rid of Leonard Fournette after this season. I mean, that's pretty much like written in stone at this point.
Yep.
So there's so many other positions that they need to address. And so I think if Minshew puts up a respectable season, he doesn't create the same number of turnovers that Bortles did, then it's possible.
You're telling me that if the Jaguars have the number two pick, they're not going to take.
Yes, they'll take. That's the whole point of my conversation was I'm not saying you have to like Gardner Minshew. But if you do like Gardner Minshew, you should like him in Dynasty as well, because, like I said, he's the captain of his own ship. If he goes out there and he puts the team on his back, I'll revise my statement. You probably have to have a top three pick to get Fields or Lawrence.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I said number two. I firmly believe that someone's trading up for one of these guys.
Sure. So it's probably one and two, because honestly, they're probably going to be the best two that we've seen in a while, and that says a lot. So. Mm-hmm. I get it. I'm not saying that I love Gardner Minshew in Dynasty, not nearly as much as Bobby Koch does, but I just don't see how you could love him for this year. And Chris made a great point. They have so many needs. It's weird because we're used to the Jaguars being fantastic on defense the last few years, have need a lot on defense. The offensive line needs a lot. So we're talking about positions that are your prototypical top five picks. So he doesn't have to do much to get himself out of the crosshairs of Fields and Lawrence. If they have one or two, he's gone. But then again, he was the captain of his own ship and he didn't get it done. We know how much the quarterback can control.
But even if they have one or two, what are the chances that another team comes calling to move up and they just pull out?
Yeah, they have a lot of positions to fill, especially like you mentioned, Yannick is a huge question right now because he's not reporting, he's not signing the tag. So that could be a monch. That could be a hole almost as big as quarterback if they don't figure that out.
Right. So I'm just thinking that I'm not saying it's likely. I'm not saying that that's the hill I'm going to die on. I'm just saying for all the narratives out there that are saying that the Jaguars are going to tank for Trevor, we should at least entertain the idea that even if they do wind up in the like with the one or two pick, it's not set in stone that they're going to wind up taking Trevor because they have Ords or Fields because they have so many needs elsewhere that they could just as easily trade back and then wind up getting a player at a position of need and then just keep working with Minshew because he doesn't cost anything, at least compared to speaking to what they would have to pay for Fields or Lawrence.
We learned in tanking for Tua, too, that once these guys are in between the lines, there's nothing you can do. You can't tell them, dude, we're tanking. Don't convert this first down. So I'm just pounding home. Like Minshew can write his whole future right now. He could do. He could carry the team to, what does he even need? 7 wins. If he could just get his team to 7 wins. Honestly, they still have pieces. I mean, they have Josh Allen on defense, who's going to be fantastic. Leonard Fournette's going to get himself another 300 touches and probably another 50 receptions. DJ Chark has been amazing. Tyler Eifert's going to add 7 touchdowns before he gets hurt.
Hopefully Chenault's healthy.
Oh, I forgot. I forgot
about Chenault.
Yeah, hopefully Chenault, like, he's ready to roll. Yeah.
So they
it's that defense more than the offense, because I like a lot of the pieces on the offense. Don't get me wrong. But,
yeah.
I mean, we're not talking QB wins. That's the thing. Minshew could put up 28 points every single week. He could throw for 4 touchdowns every single week. But it doesn't change the fact that defense isn't going to let up less than 5.
Right, exactly, and that's the problem.
That's the point I was trying to get across.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if the front office knows, or at least they've acknowledged the fact that they're putting him in a no-win situation.
I just don't think they care. I think the only thing they care about right now is that they can suck and Minshew will still sell tickets.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it comes down to what the team wants to do and the business. That's what it'll ultimately come down to, the business side of things. And who's to say that they'll just continue? I just thinking that, yeah, there's a chance that they could still ride out Minshew if he's still, I guess, useful. I guess if he's at replacement level, if he's just
there
we go.
We've been talking about Bobby enough that we could just use his word.
Yeah. That's the word. I think that's what we're looking for. Yeah,
we already know he's above serviceable because there was no reason that the Jaguars had to go back to him after he got injured and Nick Foles came back in. They were paying Nick Foles all that money. Nick Foles was supposed to be their franchise quarterback or at least have a good opportunity to be their franchise quarterback. And they chose to go back to Gardner Minshew after Gardner Minshew missed, I think, 2 games to a concussion. So that right there already tells you he's at least above replacement level.
I stick with he was selling tickets and Foles wasn't. That's the – that is the hill I will die on. They weren't selling mustaches, so
yeah. I mean, I suppose they still landed Josh Allen, so
right.
I don't think that they put themselves in a position to lose intentionally. If that, I don't think that Nick Foles would have won any more games. That's what I'll say.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we have 2 more questions on the show sheet, but I don't feel like asking them. I am ready for bed.
Fine.
So while I love sitting and staring at you guys while you talk, because
you said we would do this until
next I said tomorrow, I would and sit here and promised? Stare at your faces until
you promised. Okay.
You promised.
All right, you guys go. I'm just gonna
lay back. Well, if you start, can you just put yourself on mute just in case you start snoring?
That is a problem. I do need to do that. Yes.
Yeah.
Fine. But no, this is my damn show. So. I am going to start my little wrap up here with saying, well, first of all, I love you guys. Thank you for coming on. It has been far too long since I've seen your faces, and I am so happy to see them. I cannot wait for the day where I see them in person again. But since we're on a podcast, we should stick to a podcast and say, Chris, starting with you, why don't you remind all these fine people who you are, what you do, and where they could find what you do?
I write things, and sometimes people read them. I also do a show with this other wonderful gentleman every week on Wednesdays. So you can find me on Twitter at Chris Allen FFWX. Most of my stuff is over at 444. And I think that's it. Yeah, just come yell at me on Twitter.
Sir.
And I do the show on Wednesdays that Chris alluded to. I'm sorry that there hasn't been a Dom recently. That is because we're trying very hard to not suck at the DLF mailbag show. Yeah. So if you have any questions that you want answered and you don't want us to just answer questions that we randomly found on Twitter that we feel like talking about, then you need to go to those handles. I'm at APWILDE, or you can ask DLF, or there's a handy dandy link for you on DLF to just click that and ask us all kinds of stuff. Bonus points if it wasn't just a trade, because this lovely gentleman that had us on the show wants all your trade questions, because he cares about your fantasy teams more than anyone you will ever find in this universe. He even has a shirt that says it. So ask us any questions you want. As close as you can get to philosophy makes me happy. That's what I like to talk about. And we love you back, Russ.
Yay.
We love you back.
Yes. And I do still love my pinned tweet is literally the phrase, I care about your fantasy football team.
You do.
It still makes me happy that every once in a while I'll get a new follower and like, and I'll see that tweet get liked, and it just, it makes me smile. Cause A, I forget it's there still, but it's just, you know, I care. But my stuff at the end, if you are like me and want to see these beautiful men's faces, patreon.com/tradeaddictspod. You can sit either with us live while we're recording. Shout out to Nick Martinez, Rob, I'm so sorry, I'm completely blanking on your last name, and Larry Monkey for jumping in for a little bit. They were in the chat for a little bit while we were recording. There's still one person listening. I don't know who it is, so you're the real MVP, one person. Also, we have the Cool Kids Club, our awesome group me chat, which is, as the kids say, lit these days. No, I said that phrase in a weird order, but you got the point. FFpodshirts.storeenvy.com. We have so many neato things to buy from way too many podcasts these days to even start listing anymore. I just don't even remember. But if you like podcasts, you like t-shirts, stickers, and coffee mugs, FFpodshirts.storeenvy.com. And also, I've decided recently that since, oh, of course, Rob Sprout. Rob's the one dude in the chat, and I forgot his freaking name. So since Scott Fish is a selfish man and has closed off the link to donating to Fantasy Cares, what I've decided what we're doing is every other month we're going to choose a new charity to donate our stuff to, because we used to just donate all proceeds from the Store Envy store to Fantasy Cares. Mm. But since we can't do that, till the end of August, we're going to be donating all proceeds to the Colorectal Cancer Alliance. So if you feel like buying some stuff and you feel like donating a little bit of money, that's a good way to do it. Also, we have our awesome Trade Addicts Pod wristbands, which are $5 each. $2 of each of those wristbands will also go to charity. And if you did, I sent that, oh man, I've been so freaking bad about sending stuff out lately, but I went to Walgreens over the weekend. I sent out like 5-6 packages because I've been like too afraid to leave the house, but I finally just went. I'm like, no, this just, the world needs to happen. And I wore my mask and I went out and I did it and I survived, thankfully. But at that note, I'm going to say thank you again for being part of my world and good night.
Good night.
Peace.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast. Please remember to follow our host at Dynasty Outhouse and at YMRFF. And follow the pod at Trade Addict Pod. Please review, subscribe, and rate the podcast. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.